going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Welcome on in. WWL Draft Fest coverage continuing. Steve Geller, Jeff Nowak, Charlie Long, and of course, Cullen Steele keeping us all in line here on this glorious April 27th. Gorgeous Sunday out there. Hope you are gearing up for also Jazz Fest, which I cannot wait for next weekend while I'll be taking part in. This weekend, though, gentlemen, it was all about the NFL Draft. The Saints, I think to pretty much everyone's surprise, held on to all 9 selections.
We're talking about Draft Fest.
Right, exactly. Not Jazz Fest, the Draft Fest.
Was that better or worse than yesterday?
Draft Fest. Yeah, I was thinking about that overnight, and I was like, I can pull this off. I can get this done. It didn't work yesterday.
Improved.
I didn't get the inflection right. We're talking about Draft Fest. Anyway, I'm sorry. What was your question, Steve?
9 picks in the draft, and they kept them all.
9 picks, yeah. I think it kind of signals, you know, I don't think it signals a complete shift in philosophy in terms of how you address the players, how you assess, okay, who do we want to bring in? What are our goals? What are our, you know, ideals for these players and what you're looking for? But I do think it's pretty telling of we have holes on our roster and we got to fill them. Now, what Mickey said and what you heard in the Sports Flash is they had trades that they were looking at. It just didn't develop. There just wasn't anything there.
Worth it for them, right.
And, you know, I think it's a smart move. When you're in the situation the Saints are, when you are coming off of a fourth consecutive missed playoff season, you won 5 games last year. You are not a player or two away. You need to restock the deck. And, you know, we'll go through the UDFAs that have been reported. We haven't gotten official word yet.
Even busier after the draft, too.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. Well, it's not a big class. And part of the reason is you drafted 7 players last year. You draft 9 players this year. There's only so much space for a UDFA, you know. And because you draft a player, you know, you take Fadil Diggs. And we should go through the list of the picks at some point pretty soon here. But you draft Fadil Diggs at 254. I mean, he was probably your top priority in free agency or in undrafted free agency, right? So it's like that's kind of where you are. But no, I don't know. The thing is, when you make this many day 3 picks, you know, I'm not Mike Dettelier. I'm not going to tell you
Fadil Diggs
at Syracuse. I'm like, I know exactly who he is. It takes me a little while. So
in week 3 against so-and-so, you know.
Try not to have a visceral reaction right away. It's easy to sit there and be like, oh, I like this guy. I watch this guy. But they took that guy. Why? You know, and you kind of have to go into it with an open mind and understanding, like, they've been scouting these guys for a while.
Yeah.
They kind of probably know what they're talking about. So, you know, I'm interested to kind of get a closer look at a guy like Fadil Diggs, who started at Texas A&M, went to Syracuse. Malik Yamatavau, who I talked to at the Senior Bowl. You know, there's a lot to like, I think, about this class.
What I think, too, for me, guys, is like you have a whole new regime coming in. You want as many of your guys as possible, too.
Right.
So that made sense to 100%. Me.
Correct. And Jeff, you spoke with Matavau. I wanted to get your thoughts on him, you know, at the Senior Bowl. Mike kind of talked about him, that he's a big receiver more than like a blocking tight end. But in the 7th round, it's worth kind of a dart throw. It feels like you have a couple of those, though, with like Dallin Holker. So that's going to be some interesting camp battles to watch.
Yeah,
what you guys starting with the 7th rounders first. We're going backwards.
Yeah, well, before we get into that, we're going to get into all of the picks. I don't want, you know, and so let's go through the list of picks first.
Sure.
Just to kind of get. So, Steve, do you want to kind of go through it?
Yeah, let's go for it.
All right. Okay, so you want me to do it? I can do it off the top of my head. Okay, number 9
wow,
overall,
go.
Kelvin Banks, offensive tackle, out of Texas, right? You know, I think a lot of people were looking for a more flashy name. Didn't get it either way.
But should be expected if you're a Saints fan. You know this team drafts trenches early on.
Yeah, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me 17 times, shame on me, right? Number 40, quarterback Tyler Shuck out of Louisville. A lot of people want to say this was a reach. I disagree with that. I think this is the range he was always going to go in. He was my mock draft pick. I had the Saints trading up to 32 to take him. They stood pat. They got him. That's the range he was going to go in. Right? Don't get fooled by your mock draft simulator. Like, the teams had higher grades on this guy than PFF maybe did. Anyway, going forward, number 71, Vernon Broughton, defensive tackle out of Texas. A guy that, again, people say is a reach. Saints had really good intel on him. Bo Davis was his coach in college, so you brought him in. Next pick, second pick of the third round, you had Jonas. Not Jonas.
Oh, no, sorry.
Jonas Sanker, not Sankey, Sanker, safety out of Virginia, big time tackler, super athlete, came up playing 8-man football. We need to talk to Scott Shanley about his time in 8-man football at some point. He calls it arena football without the arena. Kind of just a fascinating story, but you know, an interesting piece. So that's the end of the day two picks. Fast forward to day three. It's funny because we got a text on the Oakenheart Jewelers Talking text line going into the draft. They were like, I like all these Texas picks. I would take them way sooner than anyone from Oklahoma. And it's almost like the Saints were listening and said, bet, because first pick in the fourth round, number 112 overall, Danny Stutzman. You know, he might sound like a car insurance salesman, but he does make tackles, man. 100 tackles each of the last 3 years, led the Big 12 in tackles in his sophomore season. So, hey, I like that pick. I like volume tacklers, and that's what you got with Jonas Sanker and Danny Stutzman. Fast forward, we're heading back to Kentucky, baby. The Fighting Jeff Duncans. The Saints at 131 overall take Quincy Riley, cornerback out of Louisville. Obviously a teammate of Tyler Shuck in college. You got two players out of Texas, two players out of Louisville. Whole heck ton of Senior Bowl guys. Then no picks in the fifth round. Fast forward all the way to 184. And this is where I thought, okay, maybe the Saints might try to package these trades,
right,
or package these picks, these late picks, and move up. Nope. They wait all the way to 184. And I would say steal running back Devin Neal out of Kansas at 184 overall, a guy who's had 16 touchdowns each of the last two seasons, is the career rushing leader at Kansas, super productive. We talked to him after the draft. He was elated to finally get out of Lawrence, Kansas. He grew up there. He stayed home, and he was like, get me out of here. So he's headed to New Orleans. I'm really intrigued by that pick. Then two picks in the seventh round. You waited a long time, 184 to 248, and you end up with, again, a guy I talked to at the Senior Bowl, 6'6", 250, major need. We talked at pick 200, and I was like, Maliki Matavau at a tight end at a UCLA. That's my pick, and that's who they took at 248, one of my better draft calls. Anyway, so we'll talk more about him. And then six picks later, three picks before the end of the draft, 254, you take the edge rusher Fadil Diggs out of Syracuse, started his career at Texas A&M, transferred. And you had nine picks, nine different positions, nine different needs. Check, 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 check. Put them on the board. Move on. That's your 2025 draft class. I haven't even turned my computer on.
Oh, class for Jeff. Wow. Just rattled that off. He's been doing a little studying.
Yeah, no, I mean, we were locked in.
I guess it helps
weekend,
when you're
guys.
Writing it all up, too. Yeah, you just kind of gets ingrained in there.
So, where do y'all want to start? You know, I threw out the Maliki Matavau because you were at the Senior Bowl, but they drafted multiple
we'll
Senior
hear that
Bowl guys
a little bit
too.
You got to talk to him as well. We'll play that.
Yeah, let's start it. You know, why don't we talk about Matavau, because that's the only pick that we haven't really taken a lot of time on.
Him and Diggs. I mean, it's at the very back end of the draft, and
everybody was ready to go.
Well, quite literally, like the final 10 picks, you made two selections.
Yeah,
it was funny because we didn't even get Diggs on the radio. We'll get him soon, but it was like, guys, I think we're done. I think we're ready. But you did get Matavau, and he's a really intelligent guy. He was actually teammates at the Senior Bowl with Tyler Shuck, so there's some connection there. Like, they know each other. He had a lot of positive things to say. Everyone who's played with Tyler Shuck, everyone who knows Tyler Shuck, has a lot of positive things to say about him. But, you know, the reason I kind of honed in on him was, one, because when I talked to him at the Senior Bowl, he said, I asked him what he wanted to do the most that week. And he's like, I want to work on run blocking. I want to put my hand in the dirt and block some nasty edge players. And that's what the Saints needed. They didn't need another, you know, finesse, route running, move tight end. You got that. Juwan Johnson's that, right? Dallin Hulker can be that. You got that. I needed kind of a big-bodied, hard-nosed blocking tight end. And while it might not be what he did in college, because college, you know, offenses don't necessarily prioritize the power run game, physically and mentally, and he's willing to do that and capable of doing that. And in the seventh round, I'm not looking for a plug-and-play day one starter. I'm looking for a guy with traits, and he's got the traits.
Yeah, it's always, as we mentioned, kind of the priority undrafted free agents. It's the guys that you just want to make sure you lock down before it gets to that process. But, yeah, I mean, how did he look as a blocker at the Senior Bowl, Jeff, in Mobile?
You know, it's tough because we're looking at practice, and we're not seeing, you know, full contact. So it's tough to say, like, blocking is one of those things that's like, it's all about effort.
Yeah.
And until you see it in action, it's tough. But, I mean, like, you see him out there, and he looks the part. Right now, where I have some concerns is he's a little stiff, right, getting downfield. He's got good straight line speed, but he doesn't get in and out of breaks that very well. Like, I don't think he's going to be. He reminds me of Davis Allen out of Clemson, you know, in that similar vein. I don't expect him to be a very big impact in the passing game. Maybe over time he could develop. But no, I mean, it's like blocking is so much about want to, right? It's like being, how are you a good defender in basketball? It's not about skill set a lot of the time. It's about, are you willing to do it? Do you care? Are you willing to look bad? Especially at the tight end position, because you're going up against edge rushers that, it's like Cam Jordan loves nothing more than when they ISO a tight end on him and he can make him look stupid. Like, that's what he loves to do. That's what edge rushers love to do. So in order to be a capable blocking tight end, you got to be willing to go out there and get made look stupid, but survive. Right, you don't have to win every block. You have to give the quarterback time. And I think, you know, the willingness to do that, and like, I didn't lead him into that answer at all. I was expecting to be like, oh, I'm looking forward to showing what I could do as a pass catcher, whatever. And he was just like, I want to block people. And I just appreciated that. And I'm sure, like, if when he had conversation with the Saints, you got to a lot of that too.
I'm going to say, I'm sure that's something that head coach Kellen Moore saw as well and knows pretty well, coming from an Eagle squad that was so dominant up front.
Right. I mean, that's what you're talking about. You're going to play a lot of 12 personnel. You need the pieces to do it. And this draft, more than anything else, it was, okay, we're adding, like you said, we're adding pieces. Like, we want this, we want this, we want this. We got a lot of wants. Let's go find them. And that's one of them.
Looking at things, was there anybody that you guys wanted in this draft that kind of fell to the side and we weren't able to get to? I was upset, you know, not upset, but it was definitely disappointing, the fact that, oh, Cam Scatabu ends up going to the New York Giants.
No, that's a good one. And like Dylan Sampson as well. Those were the running backs that we talked about, like, leading into day three, that they needed to address the running back position. And they eventually did with Devin Neal.
Right.
Which, by the way,
I'm not hating that pick either, right?
Production. Yeah. Like, when you talk about potential versus production, Devin Neal had all of the production in the world at Kansas. He was fantastic there for multiple years, and you get him in the sixth round. And I think that's kind of a testament to this running back class, that someone like Devin Neal that put up those types of numbers in college was just sitting there in round six. Like, the run on running backs still happened on day three. A bunch of them went, but you were still able to get a good value pick at pick 184.
Well, that was like when we talked to Joel Thomas prior to the draft, one of the things he said was like, this draft class, like 2017 is like the premier draft class. And when you're talking about what's the best running back class you can remember, it was 2017 when like a guy like Chris Carson was going in the seventh round, right? A guy who had not a long career, but a really productive career for the Seahawks. Like, that's a seventh round pick in that draft. And he said like this class rivaled that class.
Oh, yeah.
You're getting a guy like Devin Neal in the sixth round. Like, you might not, okay, Quinshon Judkins goes off the board early. Trevion Henderson goes off the board early. Obviously, Aston Jeanty. But, like, these guys you're seeing in the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round, these are good running backs.
And I think the NFL knew that. And that's why, you know, outside of Amarian Hampton and Aston Jeanty that went on day one, there was just four running backs that went on the day two. And then you get to day three, and you have all these guys fly off the board starting in the fourth round. And the Saints were still able to get a good one in round six.
That's something that when you listen to all the draft analysts coming into, you know, the event, I just remember NFL Network's Daniel Jeremiah on one of his phone calls saying this is definitely one of those years that he'd much rather have a stockpile of those second and third rounders because of the all-around depth in this draft that there was at certain positions.
Yeah, and
especially the D-line and, the, like you said, running backs.
Yeah, defensive interior specifically, but also a really good edge rusher class. And some edge rushers that kind of fell into day two, to your point, that, like, for instance, and I know this is more of a character thing, but, like, Mike Green going, 59 to the Ravens?
Yeah, that kind of makes me sick.
And like, you're just thinking, of course, like, the Ravens, after having Malachi Starks fall to them at pick 27 in the first round, where he's going to be a stud pro. In the second round, they just get a first-round prospect fall to them close to pick 60.
Right. How do good teams stay good?
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because it's like, you know, it's really when you say, okay, who didn't they take that I wanted them to take? You know, it's always like, who was on the board when you picked?
Yeah.
And really, outside of the second round, I kind of feel like, you know, there's it's all about, okay, how do you feel about this player? Like, Vernon Broughton was probably a little bit of a reach, but it's a need, right? And you're not going to find a stud defensive tackle in day three of the draft. You're just not. Like, you'll find some guys with some traits you like, but you're not finding a plug-and-play starter. So if they feel like they have a guy who can contribute right away, that makes sense. But no, when Tyler Shrek went off the board, even though he was my mock draft pick in my most recent mock, like, I was on him the entire time. Like, I never stopped saying his name. I said Tyler Shrek to you objectively too many times. But even then, it was like, oh, man, Will Johnson's on the board. Mason Taylor's on the board. Trey Amos is on the board. Like, oh, there's a lot of names at that number 40 pick. So I understand why people got kind of annoyed. But if you think he's the guy, and I think they do think he's the guy. I think Kellen Moore thinks he's the guy.
Right, they didn't
want
to risk losing him to another team.
You go get him, and that's what they did. So, you know, I you can quibble with the value on a lot of these picks, but I'm okay with it.
You can hang out with me, Charlie, Jeff, and Cullen till 1 o'clock. Then at 1:30, we'll have pregame coverage of LSU baseball heading into Game 3 against Tennessee. First pitch at 2 o'clock. Rough one last night for the Tigers, but, heck, that Game 1 was a thriller, and I got to say, I had nodded out, so I was asleep for it.
It was a thriller at the end.
right. I woke up to go to the bathroom like at 3 in the morning and saw the highlights. Anyway, we're going to take a break. Be back with more of our Draft Fest coverage. Day 4 is the recap show. And we're here on WWL. You can join us on the Oakland Hard Jewelers Talk and Text line, 504-260-1870. We'll be back with more right after this. Who dat? Back here on our draft recap show, you can chime in on our Oakland Hard Jewelers Talk and Text line, 504-260-1870. Seeing from 0698, guys, love hearing football on Sunday morning. Which three players are you guys most excited about? And who do you think actually plays or starts Game 1? And I think one of those guys for me that I think is going to be that day one starter is going to be your first round pick, and Kelvin Banks Jr. at number 9 overall.
They better be.
Are we going to have that conversation now about where he's going to play? I think it's a really interesting question.
Well, do we have the bite from Kellen? Hold on, I have the bite.
Well, let's answer the guy's question as well.
Yeah.
Three most exciting prospects. I like Vernon Broughton a lot. Him and Alfred Collins, as Mike D mentioned, were a legit stone wall on the interior of the Texas defensive line. So I'm going with both the Texas picks here.
Yeah.
But you address the trenches with two really stout prospects. And then, you know, the third one kind of up in the air. I would probably say Devin Neal just because of the amount of production that he had at Kansas.
I'm with John.
What is the question? Who's going to start?
No, who are your three favorite picks, basically?
Favorite picks. You know, I feel like I'm in the minority, and it's like, I like the quarterback.
Sure.
I do like the quarterback. Like,
I'm excited about it, too, just because I know it's Kelvin's guy. I mean, Kellen's guy.
I've been doing that all day. Kelvin and Kellen. Like, they couldn't have
K&K
made that
connection.
More difficult. Anyway, no, I mean, like, I think people – you know, everyone gets excited about Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward and whatever, and they like people aren't talking about
Tyler
Shuck.
Folks are excited about Shedeur.
Yeah, well, that's one of the conversation. We talked about that yesterday. We should talk about it again. Mel Kiper just had a meltdown.
And I saw you on Twitter too. Our boy Scott Shanley has been going off on folks.
Scott Shanley
laying
is
the wood,
catching bodies lately, and I'm all about it. He's coming from the top rope on
like
people.
You mentioned to me in a text. It started like he slammed Derek Carr and has been on.
And
a
he
tear.
Was like, "I like this. I'm gonna go. I'm good at anyway." I mean, like, I think people didn't talk about Tyler Shuck enough, so everyone's like, oh, they just took this guy that no one cares about. But, like,
I think the biggest knock is he's an older prospect, and people have a problem with that.
Yeah, and, you know, the funniest thing is I had this, like, Falcons tool coming at me, like, oh, man, he's so old. And I was like,
what are you talking about?
Michael Penix is going to be 25 in, like, 2 weeks. Like, seriously, these guys are both going to be 25 in 2 weeks. He turns 25 on May 8th, and you're telling me now, you're like, oh, he's Brandon Whedon 2.0. Brandon Whedon was 29. That's different.
Right. What was 25 old? Man,
like,
oh, man.
God. Like, you're telling me that, oh, well, because Michael Penix came to the league at 24 and this guy's coming to the league at 25, it's a completely different situation. Michael Penix doesn't have any ACLs. anyway, I was just so annoyed. I was like,
man, you've had a lot of coffee this morning.
Well, no, it's just like, guys, like, at least be consistent. Like, if you're not going to care about the age of Michael Penix, don't act like the age of Tyler Shuck is a major issue. He played one more year in college. They are the same age. He has one more touchdown pass in the NFL before the age of 25 than Tyler Shuck is going to have. All right. So it's just stupid. It's like, okay, is the agent issue? The team doesn't think so. The player doesn't think so. I mean, I personally don't think so, because if he's going to play, he's going to play. And if he's good, it doesn't matter if he's a little older than a rookie. Jaden Daniels came to the league at 24. Spencer Rattler was 24. We don't talk about how old he was. Everyone's like, I just think it's such an overblown issue that misses the point of, like, is he a good quarterback? Can he throw? Can he make the throws? All I see is that one clip where he kind of, it looked like he...
Over and over, they keep showing that
one. I don't know what
one.
Happened, but he kind of... He was rolling out, and it kind of slipped out of his hand, and he kind of just chucked it. And then there's the clip at the combine.
That's the one I thought you were talking about.
It looks like the ball slipped out of his hand, and he made a weird throw. And they ignore the fact...
This is your quarterback?
They ignore the fact that, like, he had the best workout of any quarterback at the combine. So, no, I mean,
definitely
I think...
Definitely wasn't
Shadur. There's a lot of misinformation about, like, how he... The quality of his quarterback play. But I just think... If you're listening to people who understand the quarterback position, they have a lot of positive things to say. I mean, I compare him to Jared Goff. People are like, I can't believe you'd compare him to Jared Goff. That's who you want? I'm like, have you watched Jared Goff? Yes. I want the four-time Pro Bowler who was second in passing last year, was fifth in the MVP voting. You're telling me that would be a bad thing? Anyway, I just think, like, people aren't excited about Tyler Shuck because he's not the sexy name. He's not whatever. Like, oh, they reached for him. Whatever. I think he's going to be a good quarterback. And you're in the business of collecting good quarterbacks. So we'll see. I know that wasn't really the question.
I think the biggest legitimate knock against Shuck, I think, is just his injury history.
Yeah. And again, we're worried about the injuries with him, but we're not worried about the injuries of Penix. The guy who had two ACL injuries.
That's even more significant. Ligaments. Like,
right.
When you just have broken bones. That was the issue with Shuck, is that freak kind of broken collarbones and then, like, a broken femur, I think, at some point.
Yeah.
It wasn't...
Fibula. And he got hip dropped, right?
That's what it was.
And so it's like, okay, I mean... It's not like he doesn't have more breakable bones than anybody else. It's just bad luck.
Right.
But, I mean, it is an injury history, and you have to look at it.
But it's not, you know, multiple torn ACLs or torn Achilles or anything like that.
Yeah, the bone heals, you're back. And one thing Jeff Brohm said, we talked to Jeff Brohm after the pick, and, you know, he was like, yeah, at Texas Tech, they were having him run QB power. He was taking hits. Like, and sure, maybe he's not the most durable guy if you're asking him to play like Taysom Hill, but I don't think the Saints are going to ask him to play like Taysom Hill. So, if their goal was to bring him in and run QB power, like, I don't think he's Jalen Hurts, right? But I don't think you're going to ask him to play that way. So, you know, I just think you look at a guy who has all the traits you want. He's 6'5". He's got a cannon arm. One of the things I really do appreciate, and I tweeted about this, is watch him navigate pressure. And now, dealing with pressure is going to be an issue for him. But watch how he is able to slide away from pressure and always stay square down the field. Like, you see guys scramble, and... Like, think about when you watch a guy scramble, how long is it going to take him to set his shoulders, get the ball to a throwing position, and actually get it downfield? What he's able to do is just slide, even against his arm, like away from his arm, and always has his shoulders set so that he can get the ball out quick. And that, like, quick release when you are extending is massive. It is the biggest difference between a big play or a big interception, a big turnover, a late ball over the middle of the field. And watching him adjust to that speed is going to be big. But, like, that's the type of kind of quarterback play, subtle quarterback play, that I think you're getting out of that guy that you might not be getting out of a 22-year-old quarterback, out of a 21-year-old quarterback, out of a guy that didn't spend 7 years in college. So, I don't know. All that is to say, like, I like the quarterback. I do. And people are going to be like, oh, you're just being whatever, a shill for the team. And I'm like, I've been telling you I want this guy for 3 weeks. So I'm not going to pretend I'm mad about it. Anyway, I don't know why I'm going off on a rant, but I am.
Jeff, you feeling it this morning?
No one's even talking to me and telling me I'm wrong. I'm just mad.
You're just mad.
I'm mad at the sky.
Twitter sphere, right?
Twitter sphere is.
We're talking about Tyler Shuck, though, that 40th overall pick for the Black and Gold. And during the Zoom call with the media, he was asked, how much interaction did he have with the Saints?
Coach Tolzien came to my pro day, and we did a really extensive board work, went to go get lunch and dinner. We spent about the whole day together before pro day, and we connected really well. He watched pro day, obviously, so he got to see me work out. And then, you know, shortly after then, I came in for a 30 visit and got to meet everybody. And it just had a great experience, man. The facilities there, you know, the coaching, I met all day with them, and they had great feedback, you know, great support. And, I really hadn't heard from him, since then. And I was talking to my boy Ziad right after, and it was just like, man, I hope it works out. And as I was leaving at the airport, and luckily it worked out.
That was Tyler Shuck talking to the media about his interaction with the Saints, and we kind of were, like I was mentioning, the biggest knock against him has been injuries. hasn't been hamstring, hasn't been shoulder or any kind of soft tissue stuff. Yep. It's been broken bones.
When he got into the Louisville offense where he wasn't asked to scramble and run around as much, he stayed healthy. So and that's what Jeff said. We was like, what do you think the difference was and why he was able to stay healthy last year? It's because we didn't ask him to dive into, you know, charging linebackers on every third play, right? I don't know. I like the dog, right? I'm a dog guy.
Right.
He's got a dog, you know, and that's not a good reason to like a guy, but I don't know. I like the guy. And his dog's
name's
Murphy.
We had puking babies and dogs headlining the Saints draft.
The first two picks, you got these viral moments. You got the puking baby, and then you got the dog who just had to be part of the celebration. They bought 32 bandanas for the dog.
Nice.
And they happened, so they had every one just in case. And Tyler said that she was Murphy, who's the dog who's named after the character in Interstellar, which he said Murphy was the main character in Interstellar, which I think is kind of telling of him as a personality. Because if it's like, that's a Matthew McConaughey movie. No. It's a Jessica Chastain movie. I'm sorry. Anyway, like three people listening will appreciate that reference. But I don't know. I just hope people can go into this offseason and root for the guy, because I think that he's a lot to like, and people are reacting to very little information because he wasn't talked about a lot, and I think it's a mistake.
We know about how injuries can mentally affect a guy as well. Shaq talked about dealing with those.
For me, it's only made me stronger. I've had the bone breaks. It hasn't affected me physically, and it's strengthened me mentally. So, I feel so prepared to come into New Orleans and just go there and continue to learn, continue to grow and compete. And at this point, I'm ready for this opportunity and excited to get there.
Shaq coming into an offense with a guy that's been a QB. There's plenty of QBs on this staff. Also, it's nice having a coach that just, hoisted the Lombardi trophy in the dome you're going to be calling your home. But Shaq was asked about Kellen Moore and the rest of the Saints staff.
I mean, I think everywhere Coach Moore has been, it's been greatness from the quarterback position. I think he's a guru when it comes to that. And I'm just so excited to kind of continue to work with him. And that, I feel like this is the only team in the NFL where you got the QB coach, the OC, and the head coach, all quarterback guys. So just an incredible opportunity to come in and learn from them.
He mentioned it right there for me. Yeah, I think this is a dream scenario for a young quarterback considering all the QBs you have in the Saints coaching room.
Yeah, and I've calmed down now. I've taken a few
sips. Have another cookie.
Yeah. They're regular cookies. But, I think – the other thing I see a lot is, this is Mickey Loomis putting his thumb on the scale. And I don't know. I feel like people misunderstand Mickey Loomis's role. Like, Mickey Loomis defers to the people he has assigned to be the experts in the room.
Yeah, Mickey's not in there banging the table. Take this guy.
Yeah, it's like, I know all you guys want this guy, but I like that guy. Yeah. We're taking that. That's just not how it goes. And I think, he's the figurehead, so he gets all the blame. But, when you're talking about this guy, if you think Kellen Moore is not a massive Tyler Shuck fan, you're crazy.
It was his pick.
It's his guy. You are not bringing in Kellen Moore and saying, well, we're going to get you this
quarterback.
You
got to deal with Derek Carr, and here's this guy you drafted
too. Right, no. So, you're talking – if you think that they are just he's okay, but we're going to take him because we're desperate. It's like, no, Kellen Moore, Scott Tolzien, Doug Nussmeier, all these former NFL quarterbacks, high-level quarterbacks, know what they're talking about. When it comes to the quarterback position, they identified their guy, and it's him. So, I'm gonna say in Kellen we trust here, because I think he's a smart guy. I think his assessment is valuable here.
I love too on the Oaken Heart Jewelers talk in text line. You can sound off too, 504-260-1870. 0698, deferring to two quarterbacks we know here as well. The Cajun Cannon, he says, and Archie Manning are high on Shuck. That's good enough for me. Who dat?
There you go. And Greg Cosell from NFL Films, a couple months ago in the pre-draft process.
Yeah, like February.
Yeah, literally months ago. We've talked to him before on the show, I think it was actually before last year's draft. I don't think we had him on before this year's draft. But you saw, his kind of comments on Tyler Shuck where he mentions the mechanics are really clean for a college prospect. And you kind of expect that from an older college prospect. But at the same time, someone that has, experience, he liked him. He liked the size, 6'5", 220 pounds. For the quarterback position, he said he looks the part, and he was his QB2 of this class. And Greg Cosell watches a lot of tape. He knows what he's talking about.
The other guy who was really high on Tyler Shuck, and they kind of made fun of him about it during the broadcast, Louis Riddick,
yeah,
has been banging the Tyler Shuck drum over and over again on every show. And I don't know, like, I like Lewis Riddick. There's certain analysts out there that I take a little more seriously than others. Like, I don't take Mel Kiper that seriously. He's kind of just the draft guy.
He made himself a clown with the right, whereas, stuff.
But like Lewis Riddick, I actually, it's like when he says something, like, I'm like, okay, I buy that. I think, Mike Schlereth is another guy. Like, when I ask him a question and he answers it, I'm like, okay. Like, I get insight from that question. And so, like, listen to what Lewis has to say about him and then kind of make your own assessment.
One last thing about Tyler Shuck, guys. He was asked also to describe his style of play, QB.
I think for me, I'm a high-level mental processor and have those, you know, NFL traits and QB qualities, you know, being a taller guy who can move and be an athletic and can make any type of throw. But I think for me, my biggest thing and where I've had success is being able to win pre-snap and make up for it post-snap if it's not the right look. And for me, I'm going to continue to try and play free and just go out there and continue to grow and continue to get better. And I think that, you know, every year in my career, I feel like I've learned so much and gotten better. So that's my goal right now, is to continue to climb.
Yeah, one thing with Shuck now in the mix and another two young quarterbacks, with Spencer Rattler, Jake Haener, it's going to be a fun competition to start watching unwind, you know, start to get together, I should say, not unwind, but get, you know, going when we get into organized team activities. I mean, we're not going to see much for rookie minicamp out of anybody, but yeah, at least OTAs.
I expect you'll see Tyler.
But I feel like we don't usually get access to the practices, just like the locker room.
We'll get one practice. We should get the locker room. But you're running kind of milquetoast. I don't know if you're going to run any team sets.
Yeah, you're not going to see one practice with just not the rest of the team and be like, oh, my God, Pro Bowler Tyler Shuck.
But it will be the first time we get to see him throw right up close and get a good look at, like, what he actually looks like, the size. Like, he's 6'5". Like, he's a legit – like, he is the quarterback build you want, so – we'll see. But, yeah, that's going to come up in a couple weeks. But I agree with you. The competition, I think it's going to be a competition. I don't think they're just going to hand him the job.
Steve Geller, Jeff Nowak, Charlie Long, Cullen Steele. Be right back with more of WWL's Draft Fest coverage right after this. Welcome back into our Draft Fest Sunday recap show. The Saints making 9 picks in the 2025 NFL Draft. 9 selections. Number one we'll get into now was an offensive lineman, gentlemen, and this is definitely a need for the team with offensive tackle Kelvin Banks Jr. I know there was some disappointment that you couldn't get your hands on maybe a Will Campbell, but I don't think that was ever really legitimately a possibility, considering all the talk leading into this draft was that Vrabel and the Patriots were in love with him.
I want to say it was Brett Coleman. I forget who on social media had posted it, but it's just like Mike Vrabel probably spent 5 minutes in a room with Will Campbell. Just
I'm
like,
sold.
This is my pick.
Yeah,
he is such a Vrabel guy. And I mean, his emotions after he got drafted and just hearing him talk, because I ended up doing the locals to the pros, and obviously Monroe, Louisiana native, former Neville Tiger, gets drafted 4th overall by the Patriots. And Vrabel in this like kind of post day one presser said this was, quote-unquote, a very, very easy pick for us. They view him as a left tackle for all the analytics folks that think he can't play tackle. And we'll see how he does. And if he fails at tackle, he's going to be a legitimate guard at the NFL level. I think he'll be a good tackle, though. So it's a very safe pick. It was an easy pick via Mike Vrabel. And we're hoping for the best for Will Campbell.
Looking at the Saints pick, though, of Kelvin Banks Jr., it's really hard, I guess, to kind of break down offensive linemen as Joe Schmoes that we are, not really coaches right. or scouts.
Right.
Correct. You are correct.
You're looking at the film and it's like, all right, you think this guy's doing a good job.
It's probably Saints bias in terms of, like, I see him play and I'm like, okay, Teron Armstead. Like, he looks kind of like Teron Armstead, the way he moves around. Personality-wise, they're not that dissimilar. I just think that's and whether you want to compare their play styles, like, Teron was always a guy that was very unique in how he executed his sets. And one of the reasons I think he fell in the draft is because he wasn't your prototypical kind of style left tackle. He kind of did things his own way. Kelvin, I think, is more traditional.
Yes.
But I just think that's what you're getting is a very high character, high caliber guy. Not a ton of questions. Mickey Loomis came out and was like, yeah, we love Kelvin Banks. Like, he has very few holes in his game. He said he had people texting him when they after they made the pick and was like, this is a great pick. And like, this is like the guy that you want to add to your roster. You know, it would have been fun for, you know, I'm curious if they would have taken Tet McMillan if he had gotten one pick further. He went to the Panthers at number eight. You know, I'm sure they had some, you know, skill players that they were really high on in that spot. But I think when you get to a point where there's not, you know, the Aston Gentry's off the board, like Tet McMillan's off the board, some of these guys that feel like they could be game changers for you on offense are off the board.
Tyler Warren was
you
there.
You go back to...
Yeah, he was.
But he didn't even...
No, I know it wasn't the first tight end even
Colston
taken.
Colston Loveland went ahead of him.
I was surprised by that.
That was something that they had said in the pre-draft process, though, is that those two were really, really close. And some right. teams had them even flip-flop. But it was like 1A, 1B more than anything.
But the idea that they, you know, it's like, oh, they didn't take Tyler Warren. He didn't go for four more picks. So, right. I just think when you're talking about an offensive line prospect and you have a very – you know, it's like Fuaga last year. Like, they didn't even have a ton of meetings with Fuaga. They didn't have questions. They felt very good about him as a player. And I feel like they felt the same way about Kelvin. So however you set this up, I would be surprised if you don't try to put Fuaga back at his more natural position at right tackle. But, no, I mean, I think that's where you are is you want to add high-floor players. And that's what you got. Like, I don't think that there are many questions about what Kelvin can do at the NFL level.
No, I agree. I think high floor is a great way to describe him. Now, the question becomes, you know, where do you envision him right off the bat? Because he's starting day one. That's not a question. Left guard was the biggest hole on this offensive line from the get-go. I know that there are questions about Trevor Penning playing at right tackle. Taliese Fuaga was fantastic at left tackle in his rookie year. So do you take him and move him back over to right tackle where he played all in college? I think it would work out.
I think you probably do.
But at the same time, you're like moving a proven NFL left tackle, in my opinion. So you're either going to have Kelvin slot in at left guard right off the bat or play his natural position at left tackle and then move Tally back over to right tackle. I think it's an interesting conversation to have. I'm looking forward to seeing what the coaching staff does. In my opinion, I think that's probably what you do.
Here's the thing. If you're going to do it, I think you want to do it now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because if you get half through the season, you're like, this isn't working out. Like, you don't want to do it then. If I'm changing his position, I want to do it while we're changing offenses and there's so many moving parts to begin with. That's where I land. But yeah, I think either way, you have your tackles of the future.
Agreed. You have your bookends. And so with Kelvin, you know, 3-year starter at left tackle at Texas, very decorated, all SEC, unanimous, all American. It's just. High floor is one way of putting it. Safe is if you want one word for the ninth overall selection.
Yeah.
Safe for Kelvin Banks Jr.
The I can't remember who it was, and Mickey kind of referenced this last week. It's like you're not trying to hit home runs. You'd love to hit home runs with every pick, but like I want to hit doubles, and worst case I want to hit singles.
Yeah, that's the Ravens.
I'll just take
philosophy.
Getting on base, baby.
Like I'm not striking out here. You can play a little scared there. You know, you're not going to hit a lot of home runs if you're not trying to hit home runs. But, yeah, you know, they're not in a position to swing for the fences. They're in a position to add quality players. And
line drive down the middle here.
Right, right. I'm going there. You know, it's like, yeah, I could try to pull a home run over the left field wall, or I could go with the pitch and, you know, slap a double into right field, and I'm still, you know, moving things.
Speaking of baseball, we will have the game three of that series, the rubber match, at 2 o'clock today, 1:30 pregame coverage. But real quick, want to get into some Kelvin Banks audio, his impressions from meeting with the Saints pre-draft.
At the combine, man, it was definitely a good meeting for me. Went in, drew up some play schemes, but also just getting to see what type of organization they were and them getting to see what type of person I am. So we had a great meeting there. And then at Pro Day, Coach Nugent, he kind of ran a drill there too. And we kind of got to interact a little bit, like the football aspect of it. So it was definitely good communication there.
Talked about kind of a little bit about where we think Banks could end up lining up for this squad. He was asked if he was talked to by the Saints staff on where he will be on the O-line.
I'm going to play whatever, man. As long as I'm the best, if I'm the best five on the field and they give me the opportunity to go out there and start and earn that right, then I'm going to play wherever they put me at.
I think that's the big key. Best five on the field, that should be the Saints philosophy and believe it will be going forward. You're not just trying to fit somebody in there. Banks describes also his skill set, what he brings to this O-line.
I'll say I'm a smart player, smart, physical. Smart is fast thinking, but fast thinking, quick feet, things of that nature. So I'll say those are like some tangibles of where my game excels.
And Kellen Moore's first ever pick as the head coach of the Saints. Banks was asked his interactions with his new head coach.
At the combine is when I really talked to him the most, and he's a great guy, man. He kind of lets his players be who they are. He wants to understand you. He wants to understand where you come from and things like that. So it's definitely a good meeting at the combine with him, and he's a great guy.
Kelvin Banks Jr., Texas offensive tackle, now a member of the Black and Gold, and seeing the draft grades out there for the Saints' first-round pick, nothing below a C. I feel like it's been pretty average. Maybe a B plus to A out there as well. I've seen for Kelvin Banks Jr. I love it. We talked about wanting to strengthen the trenches, offense, defense, and that fills one of those spots.
It's a big boy game.
I would have loved to see an edge rusher, but you know, it's like, you know, you talk about Tyler Shuck. People are concerned about Tyler Shuck. You know, the best way to make sure Tyler Shuck has a chance,
get him a wall.
Get him a wall.
We're taking a break here on our WWL Draft Fest Sunday. Steve Geller, along with Charlie Long, Jeff Nowak, and Cullen Steele, coming right back after this. So keep it locked on WWL. Draft Fest Sunday keeps rolling on. We're here till, what is it, 1 o'clock, gentlemen? Yeah. 1 o'clock, and then 1:30, we'll have pregame coverage for LSU baseball. First pitch at 2 at the box, a rubber match between the Tigers and the Vols. We're going to take a break for the top of the hour news and get back into more of the Saints draft picks. Plus, we'll talk about all those undrafted guys that ended up getting signed by the Black and Gold. Jeff's been busy writing up for us. We'll take a dive into that, so stay tuned right here on Saints Radio, WWL.